Welcome to the Estate Planning Experts Podcast. Created by best-selling author and nationally recognized estate planning attorney, Shane Smith. On each episode, we bring together experts in various aspects of estate planning to help you protect your family, your assets, and your peace of mind. To get your free copy of Mr. Smith's Consumer Awareness Guide, How to Avoid the 7 Deadly Sins of Estate Planning, or if you are in Atlanta and are interested in your free Estate Planning for Life consultation, simply register at www.theestateattorneyatlanta.com.
Welcome to the Estate Planning Experts Podcast. I am here today with our very special guest, Kavanaugh Tucker. Kavanaugh, what inspired you to become a financial advisor?
Well, you know, ironically, I was actually probably tricked into the industry. I had some good friends that had been in wealth management, as they told me, when I first came out of college, and they duped me into coming in, and then little did I know I'd actually spend the next about 18 years now in the industry. But actually, I'm all kidding aside, it was those friends that got me into the industry, and glad to be here ever since.
So did you stay with the same firm for all 18 years, or did you start someplace else and switch?
No, not at all. I started out with a national life insurance carrier. Kind of went through their training program early on. Spent about a year with them, and then have kind of been really more on what they call the life insurance brokerage side of the arena ever since. Really kind of focusing on the advanced markets and the advanced estate planning concepts.
That's a perfect segue. Everybody has a different opinion. We talk to experts every week about estate planning, and obviously they all sometimes give us different answers. How would you define estate planning?
Well, you know, estate planning, I guess a lot of people kind of break that into different segments. One being the ultra affluent, meaning, you know, the clients with estates in excess of $10 million that are doing estate planning around tax avoidance. Most practitioners might look at that as more global estate planning, and estate planning just being about directing assets where you want them to go and getting those assets into the right hands as efficiently as possible. Relevant to what we do, it probably is more in that ultra affluent space. Many times we are trying to create structures that will avoid any unnecessary taxes and transfer assets in a very efficient manner and preserve much of the wealth that our clients have built up over the years.
What do you like most about estate planning?
It's interesting. We've had, I guess, the gratification of, it's interesting to see, I guess, the migration in how people look at estate planning. What I mean by that is clients that, might be in their 50s, or 40s even, still kind of in their accumulation phase, they're not really thinking about it. They're blowing and going and growing and growing and not really thinking about distribution of assets. And they may have some basic planning tools in place. But it's interesting. As you move on down the road, we work with several clients in their 70s or 80s, and it really is interesting to see how their perception of how that changes and what sort of legacy they really want to leave. And it's interesting the way that they start to think about that and plan that. And listen, it's not always about, preserving tremendous amounts of wealth for their kids or even their grandchildren. They may want to set aside or fund some sort of private foundation or, have a university building named after them or contribute to some sort of medical research. So it's interesting as people go through their progression of life, how they perceive estate planning, and I think what's most fulfilling is kind of when they do get to that point where they decide to do some planning, where they really identify what sort of legacy they want to leave, you know, and when we help them do that, I think that when we implement planning, they can see how much further the dollars that they've built are going to go versus having done nothing and the estate being eroded by either unnecessary taxes or spendthrift funding from beneficiaries, things like that.
That makes total sense. Most financial advisors, bread and butter, vanilla financial advisors, don't necessarily specialize in estate planning or don't know how to do it properly. How did you come upon the niche? How did you get into estate planning in the first place?
I think it was really more just a function of where I wanted to work. You know, I enjoyed working in the affluent market. I've always had a passion for not so much, not as much avoidance, tax avoidance, but efficiency. There are many benefits that are available that people are just not aware of. I've always kind of have not an engineering background, but I went to an engineering school, and I've kind of always had an engineering mentality, and so structuring is a big part of estate planning, and so I've kind of enjoyed that as part of my practice. But I think, kind of to answer your question, I think it's just really been, I guess, a gravitation on my part to the affluent markets.
That makes sense. What are some of the most common mistakes you see clients make when planning their estate?
There's so many. I think that with anything, number one is just taking the steps to do it. And some people feel that they have done it, but some of the things that they've done are so outdated that they're really not even relevant. With tax law changes, with changes in their life or lifestyle, or someone may have gone through a divorce, or descendants may not be around, or the initial intent may have changed. So many people think, "Oh, I've done that," you know, and in reality, they haven't. And so they make a mistake of just assuming that all that is in good order, and it's very problematic. So I'd say that's probably the number one is just taking the steps to sit down with your advisors and review all that and make sure it's in good order. The second I would say is, once we've kind of taken those steps and you've sat down with the attorneys and, we've set up various entities, many times I don't see a lot of follow-up in actually taking the steps to put those assets in those entities or retitle those certain assets. So, for example, attorneys may set up certain trusts to hold certain assets, and they never go retitle that property, or things aren't just followed through. So a lot of times that stuff is left very open-ended and not buttoned up. But those are probably two of the most common mistakes I see.
So not getting it done in the first place, and then once it's done, not following through and actually implementing the advice you were given to pull off what you're trying to accomplish.
Right. You'd be surprised. I see a lot of clients that pay a lot of money to some very very good attorneys that help them put some creative and solid structures in place, but all of that is useless if you haven't put the assets in those entities, to take advantage of it.
Sense to you and I, but yeah, we see that every day is they hire us. We, the offices of Shane Smith, we write the trust, and then they don't transfer their assets in, so it's useless. You're absolutely
sure.
Right. So obviously we try and stay on top of our clients, and make it as easy as possible for those transfers to happen and to remind them to do it. Do you have any other way? How are you solving those problems?
You know, I mean, specific to what we do, I mean, again, we're very specific on, you know, the preservation aspect. So a lot of that will end up having to do with some sort of life insurance structure. So we actually have admin platforms in place that give clients annual reporting. It's almost like a report card of the assets that are in these trusts. They tell them, you know, how the assets are performing, what the longevity of those assets are going to be, how, you know, there's a constant update on how things are titled. You know, we're constantly sending our clients reminders or checklists of, hey, have any of your, has your beneficiary situation changed, or has this or this or this changed in your life? And, you know, that's nothing too intrusive or too difficult to do. I mean, a lot of times these are, you know, four-page reports that clients are getting, and then maybe a one-page questionnaire. But there's a lot of things that I think practitioners can do that, you know, that can automate that process a lot for them. You know, and just kind of specific to our industry, we've employed a lot of those practices to help with notifications, reminders, administration, you know, things like that.
It sounds like you have. It sounds like a great way to use technology to help your clients achieve the result they hired you for in the first place. That platform that you talked about with the report card, is that something that is proprietary to you that you built, or is that industry software that you, that anyone in your position hypothetically could get?
Yeah, no, it's not proprietary to us. We had looked at it, we had looked at doing something on our own and realized that that was a whole nother career almost for us.
Yeah,
and so we luckily were paired with, there's a few firms out there that do things like this, and we luckily, were paired recently with a group that does it, and, we've actually been through two or three different iterations of firms that do this, and been with this one actually for quite some time now. You know, to a point that we're very comfortable with them, and we'll probably keep them to administer our platform.
What technique do you use? What estate planning technique do you use that you wish more clients knew about?
I would probably say planning around IRAs and probably annuities. You know, I think a lot of clients, especially when a large percentage of their assets are IRAs or annuities, and they're looking at those assets as a way to transfer wealth, and, you know, they're kind of looking at that as their nest egg. They may be spending other assets or getting income from other assets and not really using annuities or IRA money. We kind of find that that is probably the worst way to transfer wealth. As you well know, on, you know, on IRA assets, basically no taxes have been paid on that money. And so there are some avoidance practices, you know, stretches and various other methods like that, but at the same time, that money is still only worth 50 to 60 cents on the dollar to that beneficiary. So we have certain programs where we will put leverage in place to replace those assets, or even leverage up or skip generations. And that's, you know, that's applicable to, you know, the mass affluent marketplace, not just the ultra affluent. But absolutely, I would probably say the inefficiency of IRA and annuity type assets is probably the number one problem I see.
Okay. With obviously, you keep your clients' identities confidential and have policies regarding that as we do. Without revealing any names, could you tell me hypothetically about your most recent estate planning client and what their situation was?
Yeah.
We'll call them, let's say, Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about which one I would be okay with. They're all so unique that,
If you could make them a little bit more generic so they won't identify themselves when they hear that.
Sure, sure. Well, I've got one. I had a client down in South Florida, and it's very relevant to the strategy that I was last speaking of. You know, about a $30 million client had a significant portfolio of municipal bonds, and also a very large, he was a retired physician. And so as a result, he had been just, you know, pumping money into defined benefit plans, which grew and grew and grew. And so he had a very large profit-sharing plan balance, and was close to, you know, about $3 million, and the couple was in their 70s. And, you know, for a profit-sharing plan on an individual, that can be pretty large. Well, when you looked at his $3 million in IRA money, and you factored in income in respect to decedents and also possible estate taxes, he was actually looking at his heirs getting about 30 cents on the dollar, you know, or less than a million of that initial $3
million. Wow.
Yeah, so we actually employed a strategy that, to just kind of oversimplify it, you know, we were able to purchase some life insurance contracts. We were able to recognize some income on that purchase, but at a much lower rate, and eventually sell those life insurance contracts to a dynasty trust. And so instead of $3 million, we were actually able to leverage that up into $7.5 million.
Of going from $3 million to a million after taxes, what his beneficiaries would get, instead of losing 60% of his estate, you were able to more than double it.
Yeah, yeah, and it sounds a little rosier than it actually was. There is some income recognition in there, but yes, at the end of the day, it was when we modeled it out, it would have been very difficult to beat what we were showing. You would have had to have an astronomical rate of return inside the IRA to beat our structure. So yeah, that's kind of an example, or you know. Kind of the normal type thing that we might see.
I was going to say, I bet you that makes for a happy client.
Yeah, yeah, he was very pleased.
How did they find you?
We had a relationship with their wealth manager down in South Florida.
So another hypothetical, for lack of a better term, so it's almost like you're the financial advisor for financial, the estate advisor on the financial side for financial advisors, because they're a quote-unquote wealth manager, obviously, didn't do the estate planning aspect. They may have just managed the portfolio.
Yeah, and we see that a lot. They recognize it as well. You know, a lot of the firms have done a great job of putting, you know, resources in place. But maybe, you know, those guys are so good at managing money that maybe they don't have the ability to kind of focus on other disciplines, and rightfully so. You know, I don't know how to manage money. So certainly we've, I guess, just kind of over the years developed relationships with some of the bigger banks, some of the regional RIAs and regional broker dealers, and yeah, you know, we do have some relationships with a lot of them where they might rely on us for certain ideas, certain structures, and helping them find solutions for their clients.
Who is an ideal estate planning client for you?
You know, a guy worth $100 million who's 85
right,
years old.
Right, we would all like that.
You know, the sweet spot, you know, for us, and it's interesting, you know, with the exclusions being increased, there is kind of a void, you know, right at the end of EGTRA, 2010, 2011, whatever it was, and, you know, everyone kind of was in a mad rush to take advantage of, you know, the lifetime gifting exemptions. And I feel like we kind of saw a lull after that for a couple years. You know, this year and kind of around the tail end of last year as well, I mean, we've certainly seen, I don't know if it's necessarily newly found wealth, but a lot of appreciation in assets, and a lot of people that are now realizing that they have a problem Real estate's back. The market is back. Certain people made certain moves and certain trades. M&A is up. So we're seeing a lot of people with liquidity events. We're definitely seeing a lot more activity. You know, typically I'm not really getting involved in a case unless they are above the exemptions, you know, so, you know, roughly in the 10-8 area. And typically, as I was kind of alluding to earlier, they kind of really have to be at that point in their life where they're wanting to set something up or leave a legacy, whether it be for their kids or grandkids, or whether they do want to do some charitable planning. And again, you typically don't see that for clients that are still in that accumulation phase. So I would probably say 65 and above, and, you know, and above that 10-11 million range.
What is, so let's say I fall into that, some of our listeners fall into that category. They are in your definition of an ideal client. What is the first step you would want for them to take?
I'd actually want them to talk to their attorney first. You know, I kind of like for them to have an idea, or have at least talked to their attorney about, you know, where they are, about some potential ideas there. I like them to at least have some ideas vetted. I prefer to come in as part of a team, you know, rather than kind of direct everything myself and then get approval from other parties. And to me, you know, I think the attorneys really drive the relationship. Yeah, so I guess to really answer your question, I like them to go to their attorney first and get some of the basic stuff out of the way and recognize where, you know, hey, look, we want to implement some of these structures, and then, you know, come in as kind of a specialist in our discipline.
So let's say they were ready to take the next step to have them and their attorney meet with you. Or they had more questions they wanted to ask you. What is the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Sure. I guess just calling our office here. In Atlanta, our office line is 404-920-4140. And we're here quite frequently. and also, I can be emailed at the letter K, Tucker, at southcapgroup.com. I guess the other thing is, you know, our bios and experience and some case studies are online at our website at southcapgroup.com.
Okay, southcapgroup.com. Kay Tucker at southcapgroup.com. Kevin Tucker has been our guest here on the Estate Planning Experts podcast. Kev, we greatly appreciate you being here and lending your expertise for our listeners. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.